And now part two, which starts a little bit like this. The wind is a gentle breeze. The bells are ringing out. They're calling us together. Wish my dreams would never go away. I'm Ewan Spence. Welcome to the All About Simeon Insight podcast. And he went away, but he's back. From Barcelona, Rafe Blandford.
Hello, everybody.
And still with me, Steve Litchfield.
Oh, those weren't the lyrics to verse two of Barcelona, were they, by any chance?
They may well have been, yes, Steve. Congratulations on paying attention. Everybody else is going, what is that? Oh, now I get the start from the last show. But anyway, there we go. This is what happens when Rafe goes away. Rafe?
Yes,
Ewan? I'm assuming that your plane didn't catch fire or anything like everybody else's.
No, it didn't catch fire, or rather have funny smells in the cockpit. I did have my share of travel woes. Losing the camera equipment on the way out there was one of them. It wasn't actually my flight, but my colleague for the show, Ewan McLeod from Mobile Industry Review, had got a special bag to put all the camera equipment in, and British Airways failed to deliver it at the other end. So that caused a few heart palpitations on the Saturday and the Sunday, but it did turn up, but rather late on the Sunday, which limited our Sunday video recording, but we did get round to doing a lot of other video during the show.
Indeed. So, I mean, well, one of the things that people always ask, certainly of me and probably of Steve as well, is, are you going to MWC? And we kind of go, well, no, we split it. Steve and I stay back and we pick up the press releases and do the sort of news as it's going along. And Rafe goes out and gets on the ground and goes out and find interesting things. And we've been kind of half keeping an eye on what you and McLeod have been doing on. And it looks like you've just been literally been running, filming, drink. I mean, is that a fair summary of MWC for you?
That's a fair summary, although I would add in a few Mars bars in between times as we were skipping lunch. It was the Mars bar and the Kit Kat stop to keep filming. To give you an idea, we've actually just been totalling up video shooting time. We've got about 12 or 13 hours of raw video, which we think we're going to be able to sort of compress down, or rather edit down, into around 100 or so videos from MWC, and we try to get around as much as possible. Clearly we had a Symbian focus, but we've also covered a lot of the other big announcements, some of the other handsets. I don't think there's any way to be comprehensive at a show like MWC just with a couple of people. You need a whole team, but we've sort of concentrated on the big themes, and certainly on the smartphone world in particular. But you come back and you see, oh, a company launched a handset which you didn't quite get, or you could only spend 5 minutes with something. But it is an enormous show, and we really hope that you'll get a great flavour from the video. And it was a very, very busy show, certainly more so than last year.
Just briefly on those videos then, we're not going to list them all off, but what were maybe your two or three, the guests that just really got you, either with their content or their openness, or I just wasn't expecting that?
Well, I think the number one video that I think people are going to look forward to seeing is with an interview with Nokia's Antti van Jokken. Obviously, he's a big cheese at Nokia.
And he's the Bond villain!
Well, he does bear a passing resemblance to Stromberg, it's true. But he's going to be talking about the Nokia N97, and basically we wanted to get some reaction on this. You know, there's been a lot of negative feedback around the N97, particularly in the online media. And in the interview, we actually talked about this. He said, yes, you know, we had problems with our sort of quality control or the product quality, and we addressed that with things like the version 20 and the version 21 firmware release, which, as we know, did fix many of the problems. There were some things more inherent in it as well, which you can't do anything about. But he also talked about how Symbian 3 was a fix for many of the problems that we've seen in those N97 and related handsets. And he also talked about where he saw the future going in terms of what sort of devices would see, and, you know, future for hybrid devices versus non-touchscreen. So I think people really enjoy seeing that. I think another highlight for me was we had a chance to talk to one of the product managers for the Sony Ericsson Vivaz. And a lot of people, you know, you get the 5 minute videos as you're given a quick down of the handset, but we went into quite some detail on the feature set, for example, the autofocus continuous in the video recording, but also just the materials on the phone and why certain design choices were made. And I think that will give people the really real story behind the handset. So I think people will enjoy seeing that. But also, you know, just speaking to lots and lots of developers saying, you know, what's your reaction on Symbian? And I think the most interesting thing here was, you know, despite a relative lack of announcements and Symbian handsets at the show, I think mainly because it's not fitting in with the sort of development timelines of Symbian 3 and, you know, handsets around that release, which is going to happen in the summer. So in one sense, MWC was a couple of months too early for that. So rather than release more handsets on the sort of the old platform, we can see, I think, in a couple of months' time, the Symbian 3 handset starting to take off. But it was really the optimism that the developers were talking about. And it was saying, you know, Symbian really is the platform. It's the biggest platform, and it's the way we can reach the widest audience. You know, so they're talking about distributing through various app stores, be it Sony Ericsson Play Now Arena or Nokia's Ovi Store. And the ability to reach, you know, 180, 200 countries, which for them was almost unprecedented. There were still the usual comments about the difficulty of Symbian development, although that had to be measured against the fact they were able to do more with it and implement more sophisticated features. But certainly they were very much looking forward to the move to Qt 4.6 and thought that would make a big difference in development. And it, you know, Symbian, the foundation, talk a lot about Symbian as a de facto platform, and that really does seem to be the case for a lot of developers. Especially the European-based ones, there's still a disconnect, I think, with the Americans. But that was, you know, cause for a great deal of optimism, I think, for the future. And in contrast with a lot of the story we've been seeing pushed in the media about Symbian being dead, most of the, you know, people I spoke to at MWC were going, yep, you know, Symbian, that's a checkbox. And they're quite well aware of it. And it is differently positioned to things like Android and iPhone. And the sort of education that I think both Nokia and Symbian Foundation has sunk into the industry, but it's yet to really permeate outside it. And there is, of course, still a lot of love for Android and iPhone as the high-end sort of sexy platforms. But there's also an acknowledgement that if you're going to reach markets like India and China, you're going to be having to look at Symbian. And even in the sort of developed markets in the Western world of Europe, you know, Symbian is still the dominant platform. And the moves that Nokia have made strategically, rather than what's visible to consumers, are very positively being received by the industry and by consumers. And so I actually came away with a much more positive feeling about how the industry regards the future of Symbian than I did, than I really expected after going to MWC.
How did everyone perceive Nokia? Although they weren't there on the shop, the show floor. They had their own venue outside and people had to trip across. But I gather it was quite well attended. But how did people actually perceive Nokia's lack of show in terms of new hardware?
I think you really divide them into two groups. There are those who expect Nokia to produce something and are therefore disappointed that they don't. But as I sort of hinted at before, it's really down to time frames about when you announce handsets. You know, Nokia probably could have shown off a Symbian 3 handset. They showed off a design preview. They could have shown a handset and saying, well, it's running, you know, Symbian 1 at the moment, but it will run Symbian 3 when it gets released. But it would have been, you know, a 5-6 month gap before it was actually on the market. So I think better to wait. You also have to bear in mind the fact that with these events, there's so much news going on. Getting out from behind everyone else is quite difficult. And by being off-site, Nokia was better able to control the flow of people and the people it spoke to. And I suspect that gave them a better return. It's also far cheaper than being inside the show floor. And Nokia are big enough that they can do their own events and everybody will come along anyway. Where I think that's not so true for the smaller vendors. So I would fully expect Nokia to be doing an event around the big Symbian 3 handsets later in the first half of this year. But in general, the response to Nokia is that, you know, everyone realizes they're the big player. You know, they're 40%, they're everywhere. They're playing in services, they're playing in handsets right across the spectrum. Yes, I think there is, you know, some feeling that they're not as fast moving or haven't been as innovative in recent years. But a lot of the evidence is coming back the other way. And I think at a show like MWC, you know, there were a lot of iPhones and BlackBerrys being carried around, but a lot of people also carried a Nokia, you know, as you'd expect, lots of people carrying multiple devices around. And more often than not, Nokia was one of those two, and then it tended to be fairly evenly divided between iPhone owners, Android and BlackBerry. It's not exclusively true, of course. But the industry as a whole is much more aware of Nokia's scale, far more so than the consumer mindset, which is typically in the sort of people we talk to in the online blogs, very much focused on the high end. there's a much greater awareness of Nokia as a global player and the significance that that means for its logistics chain, its distribution channels. And so it is interesting. You talk to people there, and it's not a question of having to defend Nokia. There are exceptions to that. I think there are, you know, increasingly in MWC, you do get the sort of the venture capitalists out of Silicon Valley and some of those who I think have a much lesser appreciation for Nokia's position because they're in their own bubble. But even then you get ones who say, yes, you know, I understand the iPhone is important. It's a great way to sort of launch and get attention and get your money. But if you're going to go truly mainstream, you're still going to have to engage with Nokia because they're the big elephant in the room whenever you come to talking about anything about mobile. And there is, for those that are a bit more aware of what's coming with Symbian 3 and Symbian 4, there's a recognition that Symbian, in terms of the UI, which is a thing that gets so much attention, they're going to certainly start coming back in a big way. And for those that understand the engineering challenges and the capabilities of Symbian OS, Symbian is already regarded as well ahead, and there's all kinds of problems with Android. And it's interesting to talk about Android just very briefly. There's, you know, 50 handsets I think were announced running Android at MWC. How many of those will ship in serious numbers is open to debate. Eric Schmidt during his keynote said that there's 60,000 Android handsets shipping a day, but they're facing a lot of problems around fragmentation. And a lot of the people I spoke to said, you know, the Android buzz has been very much consumer driven, and there's a lot of handset manufacturers and operators who are less convinced by the complete picture of Android going forward. And I think that's particularly with attention to what is Google's stakeholder in this. You know, is it truly open? Are my interests best served by going Android, or do I become subservient to Google? And that's the conversation that's going on now. And I think the buzz inside the industry is much less positive on Android than perhaps a consumer buzz is.
Speaking of buzz and everything, you said they're Nokia, not on the MWC floor. What about Symbian? In previous years, they've had a big stand, actually, at MWC. Was there still a stand there? Was it scaled down? What was? Now it's a foundation as opposed to an ongoing profit-making business. What's their scale of impact as a company at an event like this? Is it just in the chattering classes, or do they actually have a big, solid presence that they can hook through for the rest of the year?
It's an interesting one, Matt. I mean, Symbian itself, the foundation, as you said, non-profit organisation, so they actually had a small stand at the back of Hall 1. They also actually had a sort of hospitality lounge, which became sort of a great area to go and get a drink and get some fast Wi-Fi. But also, I think the conversations nearly were always had Symbian in them to some extent. Now, obviously, that's biased by the stuff I was looking at. But the sort of general awareness and knowledge of Symbian is greater than, you know, MWC going back maybe 5 years. And that's a different contrast. You know, it's part of the background furniture. But the foundation presence itself, I think it's fair to say, was relatively low key. I mean, we did have the announcements with the Open Screen project, the sort of official unveiling of Symbian 3. But you also have to remember that in one sense, the foundation is now an alliance or a foundation of 150 companies. And it's rather telling that if you look at it compared to some other industry sort of groupings, Symbian members having stands on the floor were probably better represented than anyone else. Now, of course, many of those members have multiple interests, but you'd go and talk to them and yes, they go, oh yes, we're excited to be a member of the Symbian Foundation. We see the opening of the foundation, the open governance model, as something extremely positive for the industry, and this ecosystem approach is something we can really get behind. And that degree of positivity, I think, has been missing a little bit in the last couple of years. And so in that sense, the switch to the Symbian Foundation probably meant, you know, Symbian was there in a bigger way, but not necessarily through the auspices of the foundation itself.
I love the sort of visual image that gives of Lee Williams kind of shepherding 150 other companies through MWC like a preacher going, here, come through, and you're there, 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 and they've suddenly filled half the hall. Now, I know that didn't happen because you were shepherding Lee Williams, weren't you?
That's right. One of the videos we've got is Lee Williams doing a couple of interviews with some companies who are members of the Symbian Foundation, Device Anywhere and Saskin, who give a really interesting insight saying, You know, the Symbian Foundation is something we can see as crucial to building a future business model based on sort of contribution to open source, because many of these companies often do quite valuable work in the background that no one knows about, but they need a way to share it off, and contributing to the Symbian Foundation is one way to do that. And of course, if you contribute something to the Symbian Foundation, if a handset manufacturer then wants to build on top of that, who are the first people they're going to call? The people who actually created that part of the Symbian platform. So in their case, they're creating the social mobile framework, which we've mentioned before. But if a handset manufacturer wants to implement some additional features into that, they're going to call Saskin, and that's going to be really interesting as a future business model. Similarly with Device Anywhere, and we also got Lee Williams just doing a walkabout in Hall 1, talking about some of the big Symbian announcements. So I'm looking forward to sharing those videos as well.
So what's he like as his James Allen to your Martin Brundle?
Well, I think that's a difficult question to answer. complimentary, I think. Lee Williams is a great advocate for the Symbian Foundation and the open source model, and really evangelizes that, which I think is something very important because the industry is still waking up to that. As I perhaps suggested before earlier in this podcast, there's a real awareness now of that. You know, open is not something that theoretically talk about. It's happening now, and the potential for future business models is being talked about. And I think that will only accelerate in the next year. And as I say, Lee Williams, as a kind of evangelist and advocate for that, is a very powerful force behind, you know, a forward direction for the Symbian Foundation.
Yeah. Can I kind of just break in and change the subject slightly? We've been talking about operating systems there, Rafe, and I know you happened to attend the launch of Windows Phone 7 series, which we covered slightly in the last podcast with Ewan and myself. But it strikes me as being a huge, huge reinvention. I mean, it's very brave of Microsoft, and I'm fascinated by the contrast between the application-centric approach that most Symbian phones have taken in times past and what Microsoft are trying to do here with Windows Phone 7 series, and having everything based around functions and what they call hubs, people, pictures, games, music. I mean, what was your take on this radical reinvention of the mobile interface?
I think it was fascinating, as you say. Microsoft in recent years have been losing market share from Windows Mobile, so I think they did need a radical reinvention. And what they succeeded in doing, for people who have seen the Windows Phone 7 series UI, is in creating something that was stood out as different. It had a very distinct visual identity with a sort of the chromeless UI and the emphasis on typography, which comes over very much from kind of the Zune HD UI. And actually the guy, the sort of one of the designers behind it, worked on the Zune and Xbox, and is actually out of Nike originally, and that is very much in evidence. And I think that works extremely well. How effective it will be in execution, I'm not willing to place any definitive bets, but they certainly have the right hardware support behind it, with the likes of Toshiba, HTC, Samsung, Sony Ericsson, Garmin, Asus, and a lot of the other players as well. That's also been the case for Windows Mobile. But I think, as you say here, the significant thing is a sort of a move away from a pure application paradigm to an experience paradigm, with the hubs that you were talking about, particularly, I think, interesting at Xbox and Zune, very strong identities from Microsoft's other bits of their service portfolio. And I think you can compare that very strongly with what Nokia is doing with Ovi, trying to create experience around sort of service groupings. That Nokia's probably biggest strength there is Ovi Maps and the application ecosystem it's going to be building on top of that. But you can also look at things like Nokia Messaging, that again, very successful. And in one sense, the Ovi store and the Windows Marketplace are very similar. I wouldn't say applications are disappearing altogether. I think part of that is an artifact of the fact that Microsoft was concentrating on the new UI rather than the developer story. And they did very strongly say that there'll be more on the developer and application side of things at their Mix event in Las Vegas in a couple of weeks' time. So that'll be well worth keeping an eye on. But yes, you're right. It is a radical departure. And, you know, people talk about there only being 3 or 4 or 5 mobile platforms in the future, and tend to write off Windows Mobile. I would be cautious about doing that, simply because of the amount of momentum that is behind Microsoft generally as a company, and the amount of money they have. And I think they've made absolutely the right decision. I think perhaps the most interesting element of it for me from a strategic point of view was Windows Mobile has always been pitched as a horizontal platform. And what I mean by that, it was the idea of Windows on every phone, you know, appealing right across a broad stretch of the market. And you could get Windows Mobile devices from the sort of £200 mark and even a bit lower, right up to the £500 mark. With this, with the first sort of announcement of Windows Phone 7 series, they're concentrating very much on the high end. It's a, you know, a vertical approach, not horizontal, quite specific in the type of hardware it will run on, you know, far less customization from the manufacturers in terms of things like HTC Sense. You will see operator and hardware customization, but not to the same degree. And I think that element of less customization is perhaps the most interesting trend. But it does sort of, it's one more sort of sign that Symbian, in one sense, won the platform wars. And what I mean by platform is you become a platform when you're shipping over 100 million, 200 million handsets a year. And Microsoft said, we're not going to do that. You know, you can compare Windows Phone 7 series much more easily, I think, to iPhone. But it's iPhone with a unique Microsoft take on it. And I think it's, yeah, I'm quite positive about it. But as I say, a lot of it is in the execution. But what they've definitely done is established a strong visual identity, and everybody was talking about it. And yeah, that alone is a positive thing for Microsoft.
I just find it fascinating. If you're given the opportunity to say, right, forget all the legacy stuff, just design what you think the interface of a 2010 smartphone should be, what people would come up with. And that's why I think it's interesting that they've come up with this particular paradigm and how well they've done it. Now, as you say, the Apple iPhone came along 3 years ago with a very application-centric paradigm, but with the whole concept of finger touch, and that caught on. And each 2 or 3 years, you have something else comes along that dramatically and potentially moves the goalposts. And it'd be interesting to see how much legacy interface Symbian 3 inherits, so as not to alienate people who've got used to S65th edition, for example, and how much is brand new. I think that's going to be fascinating.
What I also find fascinating, Steve, is I seem to remember a couple of years ago, you wrote an article about your mobile phone interface should just be black with one button in the middle, and it would slowly fill in the things that you do onto that home screen.
Yeah.
And that sounds just like Windows 7, doesn't it?
It's actually a very good point, Jürgen, because the strongest element of Windows Phone 7 series, personally, I feel, is the home screen, which is sort of almost infinitely customizable with the sort of squares and the rectangles. And it does sort of fill up and customize to yourself as you go along. And I think that's a strong, and when I say it lacks, the choice about customization has moved away from the handsets to the individual, and it's sort of person centric. And that's, I think, in quite strong contrast to the iPhone, where applications are the sort of customized differentiator, if you like. And yes, you can sort of fill up and sort of move things about or pin things to the top of the Windows 7 home screen. And that's not so different, I think, to what Nokia sought to do with their widgets on the N97.
Yes, exactly.
And yeah, that's going to develop more with Symbian 3 and 4. And I think that's a stronger kind of overall theme than we've seen with iPhone. So it'll be interesting to see where Apple go next. Because one of the other things is, you know, there's almost a sense of tiredness the legacy of iPhone is now that there's fatigue about that particular form factor, both in kind of the iPhone UI, it's not quite so new and shiny as it once was, and the fatigue with, you know, 3.2-inch touchscreen device with a few buttons on the top has meant there's been less innovation in the sort of form factor space, and it's been down to software, which hasn't always been successful. So I think, you know, the potential for change there, and we saw Motorola announce the backflip, for example, which is a sort of a QWERTY keyboard with the keyboard that folds around to the back and can also be used in sort of effectively clamshell mode. And although I don't think the hardware is particularly elegant, it's just a bit too fat for me, that kind of differentiation there. And I think similarly with something like Toshiba's the name escapes me, but the QWERTY keyboard version of
K01,
thank you, Steve, and that kind of thing. And in similar sense, the N97 with its keyboard. And I think we'll see more around that area. So actually talking about big general themes, sort of touchscreen or, tablet type device fatigue was definitely present. And, you know, that will be solved both by innovation to some of the design, but also bits of software. And that's things like swipe for text entry recognition, for example.
Now, in all of this, it's almost like, you know, we've got the iPhone is at this set of software, this screen size, this hardware. Same with Windows 7, there's a, you will need this as a sort of element. Symbian itself has a, you know, similar with Symbian 3, is a certain size of screen and everything. Everything's coming down to sort of one device family. Yeah, the other big announcement, which has huge strategic implications, moving out of mobile as well, is the merger of MIMO and Moblin to make MeeGo, which is going to be this Linux operating system for mobile devices that will work on phones and netbooks and laptops and reach out to millions of devices. And it seems to be that they're going to need 4 or 5 interfaces to optimize and basic hardware standards. You know, I mean, I look at this in two ways, and I'm interested in your view on this, Rafe, and what was said on the floor. The Moblin project was great when it was targeted specifically at netbooks, but now they've merged, and Nokia and Intel have expanded this out to be this huge, all-encompassing, let's try and get it running on everything, apart from the mid-range phones, because we're going to keep them for Symbian. That says exactly like what Symbian tried to do back in 99 and failed and had to retarget themselves on a certain hardware definition. What is MeeGo going for? I mean, did you have a chance to talk to Nokia about where they think it's actually going to drive? Because at the moment, it's a great idea, but it seems to be very diffuse in what way they're going forward.
Yes, I think that's fair. It is early days with MeeGo, so it's difficult to make any sort of absolute pronouncements. I did have a chance to talk to Ari Yaski, who's the Nokia's head of MIMO, and also Intel's head of Moblin, and I asked Eddie that question, and I think the best way to summarize the answer is the space between computers and smartphones, and actually this is the sort of thing that is going to replace the laptop, but also where you start seeing appliance type devices in cars, maybe in the home. This is where MeeGo will be playing. I think actually people will be surprised by the fact it will play less in the traditional mobile phone space than they might suppose. And, you know, almost inevitably when Nokia makes an announcement like this, you're right, strategically extremely significant. It's difficult to tell where it'll go, and partly that's because no one really knows how that space will develop. But I've said it before, MIMO, now MeeGo, is really about the sort of future markets and the devices in between, in the sense that it is going to be what a lot of Nokia's flagship stuff runs on in terms of where they'll be creating new experience. That is going to happen on MeeGo, but you must absolutely understand that that's only going to be a relatively small portion of their product portfolio, and it's not necessarily going to develop in the same way that Symbian did, I sort of expand downwards. In fact, I think the most likely thing is that won't happen, and you'll still get to the high-end expensive Symbian devices. And they'll be pushed down lower down as well. And so there was some immediate reaction, this is bad news for Symbian, but actually MeeGo is probably very good news for Symbian. Would Symbian like to be running on everything? I think probably yes, the foundation would say absolutely. Is it ready to at this point in time? Is it even possible? I think that's open debate. I've always said that Symbian's sort of biggest problem recently has been trying to do too much on too many devices. And I don't think it's necessarily possible to address with one platform everything that you need, right from the basic phone up to, you know, car computers or sort of mini laptops or netbooks or tablets. And so dividing the two up, but the developer story between MeeGo and Symbian is incredibly strong because they're both going to be based on Qt 4.6 as their application framework, which is going to create a single addressable developer story right across from, you know, $100 handsets up to, you know, all kinds of different devices that you were talking about there. So yes, MeeGo, incredibly significant. Quite where it's going to go, it remains to be seen, but it's a massive reinforcement of the open source philosophy as the way to build software platforms in the future. Don't expect it to arrive overnight. What you're going to see initially is what would have been the MIMO 6 devices, and in effect what's happening from this early look is that the MIMO 6 look and feel will become the Moblin look and feel. So MIMO at the top end, and then the bits underneath, again, very much the bits underneath, the middleware and the hardware abstraction are much more of a merging of MIMO and Moblin. You have to bear in mind they actually use very similar components, and this was already going on if you think back to the Ofono announcement, I think it was about 12 months ago. and the components, the open source components used by the respective platforms were very similar. In some cases, there were different versions. But a fundamental principle of MeeGo is that it will be architecturally independent, so it will run both on x86 and on ARM chipsets as well. That is a big deal. Will we see differentiated UIs on different devices? Absolutely, we will. But you have to bear in mind that looking forward, the MIMO 6 UI, which is now the MeeGo UI, is going to be built to be quite flexible. But yes, you will see device manufacturers differentiate on top of it. That's one of the reasons its strength as it gets contributed into the Linux Foundation. You've already seen LG do that for a phone-like device with one of their products that they were showing off at MWC. And I think that will continue. It gives MIMO greater strength simply because it will enable it to run on more devices. But I think I want to underline here, given we're on the All About Symbian Insight, is that MeeGo is not a direct replacement for Symbian in the way that Symbian is for Series 40. I mean, bear in mind that it's taken 10 years for Symbian to get to the place where it's even starting to replace Series 40 in a really meaningful way in the hundreds of millions. And I'm not sure MeeGo will ever get to that point. I think one of the most interesting debates we could have going forward in the future is, I think a lot of people will end up carrying around a MeeGo device that replaces their laptop, but they'll probably also have a Symbian device that acts as a sort of communication center. And because of the shared developer and service story between them with something like Ovi, you will see a lot of commonality between them, with people choosing the best device for whatever thing they're doing at that moment in time. And this is reflected in Nokia's software strategy. They've got MeeGo, Symbian and Series 40, and they will choose the best one to address particular markets. The most notable thing is that Symbian, for the foreseeable future, and here we're talking probably 5-10 years, will be far and away the biggest in terms of numbers. MeeGo is going to be very significant at the top end because it's where a lot of the new experiences will be developed in terms of the Ovi services and indeed other things. But in order for them to go mass market, to go global, which is what Nokia is all about, they will have to be passed down to Symbian. And that's where Nokia is going to make the majority of its money in the future. And so to say that MeeGo is bad news for Symbian, I think, is rather looking short-sightedly. If anything, as I said, the reverse is true. And this software strategy that Nokia has introduced is extremely compelling. A lot depends on execution, of course. But I think if you look at other players in the industry, Nokia has got a much stronger strategy in place, and it's going to take others a while to catch up. Is it going to cause Nokia a bit of hiccups over the next few years? Maybe, because the market isn't necessarily completely ready for this idea. But going a bit further forward, things like the holy trinity, if you like, of MeeGo, Symbian and Qt are going to provide an extremely compelling software strategy going forward. So it will be a very interesting one to watch.
You're listening to A Tribute to Alistair Cook, Rafe Blandford's letter from Barcelona. We're now going to attempt something rather foolhardy. Steve, hold on to your chair. It's time for the quick fire round.
Okay.
Rafe, you have to answer these in a sentence or less.
Okay, I can do that. I'll have to try.
Okay. The miracle water.
Five quick questions about MWC for Rafe Blandford. What was the most interesting phone you saw on the show floor?
Ooh, tricky. Answer is HTC Legend.
What was the most interesting gadget you saw on the show floor?
Tricky again, smart plug.
The smart plug. What does the smart plug do? Go on, have a paragraph.
Smart plug is an accessory that you clip onto your key ring that gives you the capability to charge your phone and do sync. And it's interesting because it's very consumer friendly. Lots of interesting shapes, globules, round bits, square bits.
There we go. Most impressive thing you never knew about Ewan McLeod that you now know about Ewan McLeod.
He's like you and he likes his iron brew.
Good man. Most disappointing moment of the show?
Finding that the camera equipment hadn't arrived.
And what was the best indiscretion you saw from people working at the show?
The Microsoft person using an iPhone.
Dave, over to you for any last points or questions. Now we've got him in a chatty mood.
I was just not inspired, but amused by the different naming conventions. The Nokia have changing theirs, for example. We've now got things like the X6 coming along. They seem very reluctant to go down actual names. And looking at the naming mess that the computer world has got itself into, I'm not entirely surprised. We have Microsoft issuing Windows Phone 7 Series Pro Deluxe 2, or whatever it's called, something long. And then on the other hand, we have a whole sequence of baby language, which are amusing my daughter no end. We have La La, Migo, Bada, Boingo, Buzz, Hulu, Juju, Aino, Snap 2, and Vivas, which sounds remarkably like speaking in tongues or something your 18-month-old toddler would say. But so there we are, Nokia going down the simple X6, X7, X8 route, which does make something of a sense when you look at these baby words.
I guess I should give you a quick feedback on that. Bada, yes, interesting. Wait and see more information. Vivas, excellent design. Probably needs Symbian 3 to be a mass market success. Samsung Wave, first Bada handset. Gorgeous screen, but otherwise looks a bit like a feature phone, an upgraded version of the Samsung Jet.
There we go. And, of course, I always hear Vivas, and I thought, well, that's like the Vauxhall Viva, isn't it? My granddad had one of them.
Extremely nice handset, though. I mean, the hardware is gorgeous, as is the video functionality. Looking forward to getting that one in the All About Symbian headquarters, and we definitely need to talk about more on that one next time.
Yes, Ewan, we're sending you around America with a 40-year-old car. Sorry.
Yes! Brilliant! And we get a video camera crew, and oh, that would be fantastic! You're not really, are you?
No, afraid not, Ewan.
You're sending me... hopefully a phone from Sony Ericsson for me to do video stuff with while I'm stressed out flying around America.
Oh, you'll have fun.
I'll have fun. I don't know about the Sony Ericsson PR team.
We're hoping to get you and a Vivas Pro to take on his American travels, as he does every late February, early March each year. If not that, then certainly a Vivas, and it'll be the first the All About Symbian team to get his hands on it long term. So do watch out for video reports from that.
Indeed, yes. We'll be if you're running an application or you have a tool or a bit of hardware that you'd like us to try while I'm out on the road, do get in touch. Big Hi Chief Editor at allaboutsymbian.com will amazingly end up in Rafe's mailbox. We've got Looking Forward. I know Steve's got things about the Android and comparing the new platforms and handsets that are coming around and coming forward. Rafe, I believe, has a review of the E50 coming out quite soon, as well as looking back at MWC and the strategic implications of all of that. For all of that, we love to have your input as well. Your comments and all the articles are welcome ideas for us going forward. If you're a developer, reach out to us. Let us know you've got applications coming. All of that can go through the email addresses. You'll find us also on Twitter at Steve Litchfield, at Ewan, at Rafe Blanford, and also at All About Symbian. That's not at All About Symbian, it's at AAS. There you go. It's one type away from being censored at work. But from that, it's time to say thank you very much for Rafe for getting over the 1 hour of jet lag coming back from Spain.
Thank you very much, Ewan, and we'll talk more about MWC stuff next week. We've got Samsung stuff to do, Sony Ericsson stuff to do, and much more besides.
Indeed, if you want to suggest any topics for us to go into more depth, please do and get in touch. It's also a thank you and very much for Steve Litchfield's attendance here on the 5 minutes of time zone difference, because it's the end of half term and we have to get our kids to school again in the morning.
Yeah, and don't forget, if you are anywhere near Berkshire in the UK this Wednesday, that's probably a day or so on from when you're hearing this podcast, then do pop into the Phone Show Pub Meet, stroke All About Symbian, stroke whoever wants to come along and be bought a beer by me, basically. Bring your gadgets and have a good chat. Bye for now, though.
And I'm here, Ewan Spence, up in Edinburgh, been getting let loose around the world in the next couple of weeks. We'll be able to follow all our adventures and our fun with the mobile world and All About Symbian next week, next month, and for the rest of the year and beyond. Thank you very much for listening.